I'm Trinka Schindemann from Vistaprint. I'm very happy to be here today. For those of you who aren't familiar with Vistaprint, we're a company that helps small business owners create marketing materials, and we're chosen by about 20 million micro business owners globally each year. You know, it's interesting as we think about, we're really excited to partner with this women's organization, and there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, one of which is importantly that most of our customers are women. So a lot of the business owners that we serve are women, the majority of our customers. And also the majority of our leadership team is women as well. So it's great to be in this environment, to be here with all of you. I think the energy is inspiring. So I'm really looking forward to the next hour and also the session over the coming day. One of the reasons I was excited to host this session is because Vistaprint is really founded on a really important technology innovation. When Vistaprint was founded 20 years ago, there was an innovation from a technology perspective that let micro business owners access marketing products that previously were only available to larger businesses. So we were able to bring down and make accessible quantities so people could order a banner or 100 postcards as opposed to 100,000 or a million. So it was a really important technology innovation. I think a great illustration of that is the last few hours is I've been meeting many of our customers, and they come to me and they say, you know, we love your prices, but we just don't understand how you make money. And I think it's a great illustration of just how technology can really disrupt an industry. But as we think about innovation and the courage and conviction to change, Vistaprint is a company that you know, that isn't just taking that innovation, but really looking forward to say, what is it that we need to compete in the industry? And I think this is true for all of us, and that customers are changing so frequently. The industry is changing around us. So you can't sit on a single innovation and expect that it will enable you to disrupt an industry for multiple decades. 5 years ago, we took a look at our business and we looked forward and we said, you know, where do we want to be in 2015? What is the type of company we want to be? How big do we want to be? And then we reflected on where we were and came to the realization that what we were doing and doing really well actually wasn't sufficient to get us to where we wanted to go. And it created in the organization a deep conviction and that we needed to change, that we needed to elevate and really think about all aspects of our value chain, whether it was our manufacturing or our customer service or our pricing or our go-to-market, and really disrupt ourselves in a sense to ensure that we were well-positioned to create incredible value as we move forward. And as we think about courage, and again, I think it's interesting for this session, as we went through that transformation from a business perspective, things didn't always go as planned. We had some ideas around, you know, we knew what we were hearing from customers. We looked at companies like USAA and their net promoter score, their customer loyalty, and we said, you know we can do better because there's companies that are. And we found as we were making changes that we were improving some of our customer satisfaction measures, but we weren't seeing the business results that we needed to see. And there was a period of time about 2 years ago where we were making some really big changes in how we were pricing and going to market. And, you know, we were in a situation as a leadership team where our growth rate went from, you know, 15% down to 2%, right? And there was a month in there that it was negative. And we looked at it, and people asked me, and they said, were you stressed out? Like, you must have been so concerned about, you know, the company and what you were doing. And, you know, to put it in perspective, we were still growing, just not as fast as we wanted. But it was interesting because I think because we understood the market and we took the time to really listen to our customers, we had that conviction and that courage to see the change through. And I think that that's something as leaders that that we all need to learn from and all need to think about and reflect on as we're really driving change and disrupting an industry. So with that, what I want to do is kick off the panel. I'd like to introduce you to Cindy Solomon. She'll be leading us today. Cindy is a recovering corporate executive who has now been a successful entrepreneur for 2 decades, really helping organizations build courageous leaders. Cindy's passion is in helping people find and leverage their courage to navigate corporate challenges, change corporate culture, and improve business results. As you might imagine, she has a particular interest in helping women and companies succeed, which is why she's spending the time with us today. When she's not working with a who's who of corporations, she's working on her golf swing. And also trying to get her college-age daughter to return a text message. So that's
so true, so true.
That requires courage as well. So please join me in welcoming Cindy.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, thanks everybody for coming, and please continue to come in. I know you're standing in the back. There's seats up toward the front, so feel free to keep flowing in here. It is an absolute honor and a privilege. Thank you to Vistaprint for sponsoring this session. And as a loyal customer of Vistaprint for the past 15 years, it was like magic when I could do printing online with them 15 years ago. I'm a very happy customer of yours, and so I'm glad that you had the courage and conviction to stick it through. I am also unbelievably honored to be here with the three panelists that you're going to be hearing from in a minute, but they're just going to be sitting there quietly and looking pretty for a while while I set the stage for what we're going to be talking about today. First of all, I think you guys have already taken a courageous act today. How many of you sat at your desk yesterday at 4:30 and thought, why was I such an idiot and signed up for this thing today? Right? How many of you? Come on, the truth tellers. I see you out there. Because this is insane. How do we take a full day away from what we're doing? How do we take a full day away to change perspective, to get a different idea, to think about something in a new way? And that's why I'm thrilled that I have the opportunity to talk with these three amazing people about courageous innovation. Because the other thing that I think we're hearing, and we just heard about it from Vistaprint, the other thing that we're hearing about every day is how many of you have had your boss or somebody, you know, your CEO or somebody in your company say, I need you people to innovate. Anybody? Anybody? And you know what the bubble above your head says? Exactly. Don't answer that question. Don't answer. In my mind, innovation, this idea of innovation, is such a great idea. Who doesn't want to innovate? I want to do things differently. You want to do them differently. We all want to do them differently. The definition of innovation is growth. And yet, inside most of our organizations, how hard is it to truly innovate? Have any of you sat in the 14th budget meeting for a $5,000 spend, and the bubble above your head is literally, please make it stop? Anybody? Anybody? Exactly. We have become so risk averse in so many of our companies. And if you have the good fortune to be in an already risk averse industry, like potentially banking or financial services or all of those businesses that by virtue of being great risk averse people have been successful, that innovation gets ever more difficult. So I was asked to talk about this because inside of my organization, I have a leadership development company, and we create customized programs for large companies that help them create courageous leaders. Courageous leaders who are unafraid of taking a risk, who are able to prioritize against the smart risks, and who are able to, in many cases, convince others to follow in those same footsteps. Now, over the past 10 years that we've been studying this, we've interviewed over 5,000 people. And what started out as very business-focused, and we're going to interview leaders, has morphed into interviews around the world from people ages 4 to 96, trying to understand what people believe is courage, what their storage or not, where was that word from? I talked to Rackspace earlier today who does storage. Maybe that was where that happened. I don't know. Rackspace people, extra bonus for you. There you go. And to understand their stories about courage and innovation and the barriers that hold them back from taking advantage of market opportunities that might appear from nowhere. And the reason that this has become such a hot topic for all of us is because, as was said earlier, disruption is the norm. Anybody ride in an Uber lately? Did anybody see that coming? 150-year-old industry, highly regulated, highly unionized. Taxi industry went, never work, never work. Yeah, only worth $44 billion now in 5 years. It was kitten day in San Francisco the other day. I actually just went on a ride in an Uber to be with the kittens. It was weird. That was probably a bit of an overshare, but hang with me, it gets better. So disruption has become the norm. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. We've got banking, huge disruption in banking. Healthcare, huge disruption. How many of you have been disrupted in your industry in the past year? How many of you know it's coming and are terrified at what the heck it's going to be? That's the rest of us. So courage has become such an important piece. And I wanted to share very, very quickly three things that we learned within our research of interviewing these 5,000 people. The first thing that we learned is courage is entirely personal, which makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Have you ever tried to talk someone into courage or taking a courageous act? Or talk somebody out of their fear? If you have kids, we're doing this all the time, trying to talk them out of being afraid of something. How's that work out for you? Not so good, right? I guess probably the easiest example of this is how many of you, public speaking, being up here on the stage, not your favorite thing? Right? Okay, come on up. No, I'm kidding. Literally, it's okay, breathe. I'm kidding. Look at her, she's like, is she talking to me? Usually what happens is somebody will go, she's talking to you, and deflect it over to the next person. No, I'm just kidding. It's so funny because for you, being up on stage would take courage. Did you get a little adrenaline rush when I pointed to you and made eye contact? Yeah, she's not even speaking to me now. She's like, I hate you. It's so interesting to me because the happiest, calmest, least afraid I ever am in my life is right here. I would be less afraid if I was on that big stage with Candy this morning. Because the more people, the better for me. What's interesting about how personal courage is have you ever tried to convince somebody in your company to do something innovative, to do something different, to do something crazy, and you talk at them and talk at them and talk at them and you can't understand why they can't see your way of thinking? It's because it's taking courage for them to take that action. If you ever have somebody say to you, I don't know how you did that in that meeting, that took so much courage, what they're actually telling you is it would have taken them courage to do it. That's why it's so vitally important for us to understand how courage interacts with our own lives and for us individually, because we're the only ones who can change that for ourselves. So that's the first thing we learned, is that courage is entirely personal. The second thing that we learned is that most of us don't believe we're courageous. And that blows my mind. How many of you believe you're courageous? Raise your hands. Excellent. That is fantastic. That is probably 40% of the room. And if you went like this and went, oh, I don't know. Do you think I'm courageous? Forget it. Okay, it doesn't count, right? But now here's the interesting thing. So we have an all-female audience, and Jamie, all-female audience sitting here, and 40% of you raised your hands. Now, here's a really tough thing. The scariest thing I can do as a speaker. I want you all to close your eyes. Close your eyes for me. I can see you. I'm at the front of the room. Close your eyes. Thank you. All right. Now, how many of you believe you're courageous? Raise your hands up. Raise them high up in the air. Excellent. Now, open your eyes with your hands up. Keep your hands up. Look what happened.
Neat.
90% of the room raised their hands. Now, we've done this research, not just with women, because we work with all leaders, not just with women. And for me, I do mostly keynoting now. I get the luxury in my company now of running around and doing what I love all the time. It's so cool. But most of the organizations that I work with, I work primarily with senior executive teams. And most senior executive teams, as we all know, as the stats will continue to tell us, are primarily male. What happens when I ask that question in a primarily male audience? Look at Jamie's like, oh, I'm feeling really male now here all alone in this room.
Fair.
I'm courageous, and I'm more courageous than him and him and definitely that guy back there. Right? But here's what's interesting. 90% of men will immediately raise their hands and sometimes put their feet together. It's weird. I don't know. What happens when I ask them to close their eyes? Over 50% of them will bring their hands down. Now, here's the learning from that. What we have learned is that culturally, we're both in trouble. Women have been taught that they're not courageous, and if they are, shh, don't tell anybody. Men have been taught the equally destructive, you sure well better be courageous, and if you're not, don't tell anyone. Think about how that plays out in the workplace. Think about how that plays out in, you know, HP just did that magical study where they interviewed people, and if there's a job posting with 10 different job requirements, that women will only think about applying if they have at least 7. Men will apply when they have 3. And most just none. But whatever. Love you, Jamie. Second thing we learned. Third thing we learned, and this is the most important for this group, and this is what we're going to be talking to these amazing people about here in a minute, is that courage can be learned. What we've discovered in 10 years of research is that courage is simply another tool to put in your toolkit if you want to go after it. It's one more tool that you can use no matter where you sit in your organization if you choose to build it. There's an amazing quote by Ruth Gordon that says, courage is like any other muscle. It grows with use. So until we can begin to understand that we are, every single one of us, courageous, we can't begin to build that muscle. So you just got a Reader's Digest version of a much longer presentation. And at the end of this presentation, I'm going to give you a text number that you can text to get the full content with a guide, a quick guide to how to build your courage and build that courage muscle. But because we have such limited time, I'd like to now switch over to the real people you're here to see, which are my three amazing panelists. Now, these three amazing people, it took courage for me to be on the conference call because I'm like, these people are rock stars. Am I on the right call? What's happening? So you can read their extraordinary bios, which just make me tired, frankly, extraordinary bios in your book. But what I really wanted to know, and this is the beauty of social media now, is I can stalk anyone. It's awesome. Everybody in the room is going, don't give her your card. Don't give her your card. So I wanted you all to know a little bit more about them. So Chandani Porteous, as many of you have seen her interviewed and written about in the press, she was with the youngest C-suite executive at Komen, where she was head of strategy for them in some very difficult times, and then jumped from the frying pan into the fire by going on as CEO of LiveStrong, which is where she resides now. But what you might not know about her is that when Chandani's family came to the U.S., they started their lives in the U.S. with $18. And now she's the CEO of one of the biggest and most respected nonprofits in the country. And if you check her out on Instagram, which I highly recommend, seriously, it's hilarious. Check her out on Instagram. You'll find out that she's obsessed with hot sauce. Hashtag I love spice. Just saying. She calls herself a mathlete with a personality. And if you thought it was hard for you to get here today, this is a woman who juggles daily 7 calendars. And she'll probably talk a little bit about that later on. So please welcome to the stage the CEO of LiveStrong, Chandani Porteous. Sorry about the spicing. I had to do it. I know, hey. Ingrid Vandervelt is somebody that I have been reading of and reading about for years, and it's an honor and a privilege to be talking with you today. She's also one, you just read the bio, and I got halfway through and just had to have a cocktail. It's a short drive usually, but a drive nonetheless. She started out as an architect, which is hilarious, in a good way, I mean. Architect, she's been an entrepreneur. She was a law school attendee. You know, it's just attendee on that part. MBA, and now is a corporate executive, which is an unlikely path, and CEO of Empowering a Billion Women by 2020. What you might not know about Ingrid is that in third grade, she was actually kicked out of school for being disruptive, and which makes sense when you actually get to know her a little bit. But turns out she had hearing problems that were undiagnosed. And so she got those fixed and obviously continued on her amazing path to win all these awards. Ingrid is driven by two big questions in her life. How can we really make a difference? And how can we help business owners grow? So please welcome to the stage Ingrid Vandervelt. So Jamie Warder also had a very interesting path to where he is today as president of USAA Bank. And we were talking earlier, do we have any USAA customers? Very nice. So all of us covet your role as being a customer because we can't get in and it makes us mad. So for those of you who don't know, USAA, I have a customer service side of our leadership development company, and we tout USAA consistently because of their extraordinary customer service and employee engagement numbers. So it's an amazing company both inside and out. But what you might not know about Jamie is long before he became this blue-shirted bank president guy, he began his career at the U.S. Military Academy and then served as a captain in the U.S. Army before deciding that that just wasn't enough achievement. He went on to Harvard to get his MBA, had roles at McKinsey and PNC, which led him to his current role as president of USAA Bank. Three of his favorite things, you might not get this just from looking at him, but three of his favorite things
I have no idea what she's about to say.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Three of his favorite things are cats, See, I know, right? Look at it. Look at how ready he is. I love this. Katz, and his favorite app is Twitter, so be checking him out on Twitter and quoting him today while you're going through this. And he loves coaching. And his and I think it makes sense. Don't you want a leader who loves coaching? But his favorite coaching is what he does for his daughter's soccer team. So that's amazing. But what you wouldn't know from looking at him today also is that something he, you know how we travel with everything? We have our big bags and we can, you know, are you having a low protein day? Do you want a saltine? Here's a wet nap. You know, we carry all this stuff with him. Well, in case you spill something on yourself, apparently he goes nowhere without his stain stick because he's got a little spilling problem.
Very true. Very true.
So please welcome our panel, Jamie Warner. All right, so we're going to actually start with Jamie so you can get back at me now, all right? So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about courageous innovation and courageous leadership. And we're going to talk about it from the big picture all the way through the funnel down to us personally. So Jamie, you took over an organization not that long ago that is extraordinarily successful. I mean, it's crazy successful. While at the same time, you're in an industry that is absolutely being disrupted in every way possible. So what's the process you employ to sell innovation to a company that, you know, is sitting kind of pretty? You know, it's hard to change when things are going so well. You'd not necessarily want to, you know, fix what's not broken. So how do you sell an organization on innovation in that situation?
Yeah, first, it's important to know I'm 8 months in, and I have 100 of my colleagues out there who are going, he hasn't yet. But, no.
Immediate performance review, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think it is fair to say, Cindy, has been the biggest challenge so far of my short 9 months at USAA, which is just what you said. This is an amazing, amazing company. For 90 years, it's just been doing the right thing, taking care of military, taking care of their families, and it has built this brand that our members love, and it has built, you know, we get these accolades that we hear about. But it's true, if we continue to do what we did the last 90 years for the next 90, I believe fundamentally we're in trouble. Yeah. We're just in trouble because the game is changing so quickly and the things around us are changing so quickly. So as I was thinking about what am I trying to do, and I will say with varying levels of success, I'm still working through all of this as we speak. But the first thing I think is respecting the past and understanding the parts of the past that just will not change. Mm-hmm. So it's making sure that we recognize that our foremothers and forefathers have built USAA into this amazing place. There's so many things we can point to say, look how well it's been done. And then also locking onto the things that will not change, will never let change, things like our mission. You know, taking care of the financial security of our service members and their families. That will never change, irregardless of what we try to innovate around. But then I think the second, all of us who've seen the Simon, and I can't even say Simon's last name, but the why not one? Yeah. Who's seen that on TED? Okay, if you're not raising your hand, you need to go look that up. It's the number one TED Talk in history. But Simon talks a lot about why not what. So I find myself spending a lot of time on why we need to change, what needs to change, why we need to be innovative, that it's not just for innovation's sake or so that we can say we're innovative. It's because there's real reasons that are forcing us to change. So helping everyone understand and really working through that in ourselves as leaders on why must we change? And I think that really helps with making the case for what. And then I was, as I was talking about this this question this morning with Shauna at the breakfast table, Shauna said something which is so right. And she said, and it's hard. You just have to keep talking about the same thing over and over. And you think about entrepreneurs. We have some amazing entrepreneurs here too. When you think about what they do, and they talk to hundreds of venture capitalists, and they talk to their donors and their boards, and they're saying the same thing over and over and over again. And I don't think that changes in a large established company. I think it's the same message. It's hitting it's respecting the past. It's hitting the why and the what.
Yep. I think that's absolutely true. And you think about hitting the why. So many times when we're in that selling situation, when you care so passionately about something, you're just telling people, do this, it'll work, I promise you, it'll do this. But you have to get them to believe in the why. And even the language you use around it, right? I mean, you hear so much about storytelling, especially pitching for VCs and especially in the nonprofit world. It's all about building the story of the why. I think that's brilliant. And I love the idea of respecting the past as well, because, you know, new isn't fun just because it's new. And by the way, new is never fun. So being able to build that story is fantastic. Excellent. Chandani, you've had kind of a very different path and a different experience. You walked into you walked out of a organization at Komen that was going through difficulties and had extraordinary change. Then, because that just wasn't enough pain and agony for you, you jumped into LiveStrong that's going through extraordinary change. Can you tell us just very briefly a bit about those situations? And then, you know, what allowed you to courageously lead during those times? I'm going to ask two questions. Courageously lead during those times. And then, why? Why would you jump into a very difficult role?
Yeah. Why am I so crazy?
Why are you so? I was trying to be nicer about it, but yeah. Why are you a crazy person? Yeah.
You know, the why of what you mentioned in terms of the importance of what you do, the value proposition for any of the work that we do. In the nonprofit sector, it's our mission. So very much our why is the people that we help, the people that we assist with all of the things that we know they need. And in cancer, there are so many things that surround a cancer diagnosis. It's not just, you know, your treatment and what needs to happen next, but it's everything else in your life that changes, right? So if that is the most important why, then that's the first thing and the first and foremost thing. And if you believe in that mission, even through crisis and controversy, then you will find that courage, because you have to be that courage and that leadership for all those people who need you so much.
That's right.
So number one, that was there. Number two, I suppose I love a challenge. I mean, certainly over the years at Komen, it was, you know, a decade long of, you know, growing through my career, but also I had 4 children in 4 years during the time I was trying to climb the executive ladder. And that wasn't easy either. So not only learning how to become an executive, learning how to lead when people don't trust your brand, and learning how to do all of those components, but then also learning how to be a mom and learning how to juggle all of those calendars that you mentioned and somehow feel like you're not failing everybody, right? Because I think we as women take a lot of that on. We say we can do it all. We don't always take the help we need, but I think that really made me understand the importance of a strong team. And I think that if you were to have a mission that you really truly believe in, and if you are able to assemble a team and inspire people to join you, then you can be unstoppable if you really have that team. And so courage definitely is personal and it comes from within, but oftentimes courage for me comes from looking around the boardroom and looking at those faces of people who woke up every single day to be there to bring their own courage to the table. And in many ways, we feed off of each other, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's incredibly critical. And as a leader, and as a leader when you're trying to innovate or when you're trying to, you know, sail smooth grounds or whatever the situation might be, rehabbing a brand, I think everyone expects you to have some like brilliant epiphany every Friday by 9 a.m. or something. And that's really not the case. I mean, things come and they go, but it never really does just sit with one individual at the helm of the organization. And rather, it sits with all of those moving pieces that we know are in our field, in our climate, around us, that together we as a team should be absorbing, should be learning from. And I do believe that's where innovation and change comes, right?
Yeah.
And in order for it to be true, true, authentic change, it can't just be doctored in a boardroom. It's, you know, it's not that way. It's sort of looking at what motivates you, looking at how you can get there, and bringing the right people alongside to do it with.
Right.
I think that bringing the right people along is huge. And I know I think sometimes especially in large corporations, we confuse consensus building with just making sure nobody's mad at us for our idea, versus bringing the right people to the table who can actually make the decision. You know, we task force ourselves to death and yet still never innovate. So how do we find a way to get those right people? And going back to what she said originally, I think that compelling a vision That compelling vision that isn't about the numbers, it isn't about the metrics, it isn't, if you're going in and talking about how much funding you've lost, that's not the motivating thing. The motivating thing is, how do we help these people who need us? So being able to take the time, energy, and effort, and mental discipline to create that compelling vision for what you're trying to innovate against, I think, is a huge piece of the puzzle. Now I'm going to switch to you, Ingrid, because you have like the coolest job in the world, being entrepreneur in residence. Makes me crazy. I just want to walk around with you for a couple of days.
But it is fun.
Ingrid oversees Dell's global entrepreneurial initiatives. So let's talk about, very specifically, because big organization, let's talk about really successful entrepreneurs for a minute. What sets them apart? Why do, you know, there's the magic word entrepreneur, you must be courageous because you're an entrepreneur. What really sets successful entrepreneurs apart? And secondarily, do you see any difference in the entrepreneurial world between men and women? What are the similarities and differences that you see as it relates to courage and courageous innovation?
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for asking. First of all, before I start, I do want to just say thank you so much for being here today, for investing your time and sitting with us today, because part of what really separates, I think, extraordinary entrepreneurs are people who go out into the world and really with that courageous conviction, which is hard to get sometimes, but they're doing what it is that they fundamentally believe is really going to create a better world for themselves and others. And for me personally, what drives my mission on empowering 1 billion women by 2020 is because I frankly feel like if we're going to create a global sustainable future, I don't know if any of you have seen the stats, but do you realize that when women, if you're trying to find two pennies to rub together, or if you have millions of dollars in the bank, did you all know that we as women reinvest 90% of what we earn into our families, our communities, and ultimately the world? Did you know that stat? Like, raise your hand if you knew that stat.
It's pretty stunning.
Hardly anyone knows this stat. It is stunning. Yep. It's absolutely stunning. And this is why I know when you activate the power of a woman to live in her greatest purpose, and we love the men.
No, no.
For us ladies to get where we want to go, we have to do it in collaboration with the men, and thank God for all of them. I've got a number of great ones around.
We want to collaborate.
Yeah. We want to collaborate. Truly, ladies, when you really activate and find that greatest purpose, what it is that you believe in, and you surround yourself with people who can help you realize that into being, when you can start making money doing what it is that you love, it is us who are going to create that global sustainable future. Yeah. And it was that vision that actually brought me to Dell. Because I am a lifelong entrepreneur. I'm a technology entrepreneur. I know what it feels. I always say for entrepreneurs, it's hard for any entrepreneur, whether you're a man or a woman, to start a business. It's hard as hell. But there is a very distinct set of challenges for women when we're starting businesses. For example, when I went out to raise money the first time and I couldn't get it done, I was told I don't look like, act like, sound like, or talk like any of the entrepreneurs that were getting funding. And the person who told me this said, I wouldn't be doing you a favor if I didn't tell you, number one, I don't think you're ever going to get it done. And number two, I don't think you should even be trying to be an entrepreneur because you're never going to be able to raise money and you should go get a job. I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to climb the ladder, try to make your dreams happen. I was homeless after my third venture because I couldn't pull the money in that I needed to make this venture grow, and figured out what does it take when you have to pull yourself back together as women and say, you know what, this really sucks. I am in the dark of darkness right now, and I've got to take step by step by step by step and somehow turn this around and somehow, thank God, become, you know, let things be successful as they are today. But it was this vision of empowering 1 billion women by 2020 that inspired me back in 2010. I did turn that homelessness around. I was surrounded by a great group of mentors and friends who helped me rebuild. And I decided in 2010, after I sold the last two companies that I was involved in, that growing up thinking I'd be a missionary, that and realizing once I got past the homelessness, I was a pretty effective capitalist. And it's kind of nice
to me, you can show up into a room, you don't have to ask people to write you a check. You show up and actually write the checks. It's pretty powerful. But I decided I needed to be a missionary of a different kind, and I needed to commit my life to helping all of you not have to go through the things that I went through to make your journey even one step easier. And so when I was inspired to do Empowering a Billion Bit Women by 2020, I knew the only way I was going to reach a seventh of the world's population is through technology. Yeah. And so it was that vision that brought me into a conversation with Michael Dell, with Steve Felice at the time, who ran Dell, an amazing man still in town. If you guys haven't met him, you should look him up. He's incredible. Huge supporter for women. And I brought to them that vision. And I brought to them the vision that, you know what? I might not be successful doing this. I might not reach a billion women, but I am not going to stop until I do everything in my God-given talent to go there. And I know the only way I'm going to get there is through technology. And if Dell is my tech partner, even if I royally screw up my plan and only kind of get a little bit along the way of reaching a billion women, and I had said to Michael, I said, if we get a mobile device into the hands of women worldwide so that they can get on the EBW 2020 platform and get access to the tools, tech, and resources they need to be successful, even if I totally screw it up, this is probably pretty good business for you guys.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's really, it's bringing those kinds of ideas into organizations like USAA, but bringing these big ideas in. I came in with a plan. I came in with the idea of here's how we're going to execute. I was very, very transparent all along the way of how we were building towards our goal. And I think that, especially from an entrepreneurial perspective, is critically important when you bring your entrepreneurial and innovative ideas inside a corporation. Because I will tell you this, after spending 3 years as the entrepreneur in residence for Dell and being a corporate executive, I realized that a lot of these large corporations, if not all of them, they really see us as their future. They really do. If they are going to be sustainable for the long run, they need us to step up and help them be successful. So all we have to figure out is how do you actually get the first meeting? How do you bring in those big ideas? And how do you deliver it in a plan that gives them bite-sized chunks? And then keep your integrity in check. Make sure to stay transparent about your progress. And that's how you innovate inside a large company.
I think that's absolutely right. And what's so interesting to me about that answer is we think a lot of times when our companies ask us, you know, be more entrepreneurial, we think it's like spitballing. It's like, well, here's an idea, here's an idea, here's an idea. But really being entrepreneurial is doing your homework. Absolutely. Having the mental discipline to get that vision crystal clear for yourself and make sure it's what you're passionate about. Because you think about how, listen to her voice when she talks about that. You hear the passion behind it. Do the legwork and the homework to build the idea out in a way that's palatable and makes sense for who you're pitching it to. Walking into a room and going to your boss and saying, hey, I've got this great idea. What do you think? Give him, I had a wonderful boss once who said, give them all the information they need so that the only response can be yes. But be able to do the legwork on it and the heavy lifting of making sure you're clear on that. And it is about the integrity. It's maybe if they want you to do something sideways to what you're looking to do, make sure you're staying crystal clear to that vision. So that's fantastic advice. Do you see, I want to ask real quickly, do you see a difference between men and women, especially now in, you know, in the VC world and you know, in how they pitch and what it's looking like, not in how they're receiving funds, but how they approach being an entrepreneur?
Absolutely, and I'm sorry I did not answer that, so I'll make this.
That's why I'm here. I got the job, yeah, that's good.
I got myself so excited. It's such an amazing topic to talk about. But yeah, there's a night and day difference between the men and the women. This is part of why for women to excel to our greatest potential, we need to do it in collaboration with the guys. Because frankly, and I'm going to say the dudes are the ones, and we know it just historically, they've been doing everything. Yeah. They're the ones that have run the companies. They're the ones that have run for office. It's almost expected for men that, of course, you're going to grow up and do what it is that you want to do. So often for so many of us in the room, it's the first time ever, certainly in our families, probably in our communities, if you stand out to go lead an organization or go run for office or whatever it is, it's not like the guys where you can look around and there are tons of role models. And that's why I always say for women, as you start going down the ladder, it's so critically important for us to pay it forward. So here's the big difference, and you said it earlier, Cindy, between men and women. It comes down, I spend 90% of my time on the road traveling around the world, working with entrepreneurs worldwide, and it is one thing. I promise you it's this one thing, and it's lack of confidence. It is lack of confidence. That is what fundamentally separates women and men. But here's the great news. The fastest antidote to lack of confidence is simply taking action. And we take action when you have a mentor. So if there is not one other thing from what I'm saying today that you don't get or that I would love for you to get out of investing your time here, if you do not have a mentor right now, literally when you leave here today, if you are aspiring to do something great with your life, go and find yourself a mentor. This is the number one game-changing element. It's free for everybody, possible for everybody to do, that will change for you from where you are today to where you want to go. And that is the secret to elevating you to the same level as all the amazing guys out there, going out there and getting all the venture capital.
Love also what you said about risk, essentially, which is what you were talking about, is that you had an idea, you knew it was going to be great, but there's a portion of your mind that says, what if I am totally wrong? What if I am going to fail? That every single day, and I will tell you, this week I woke up and it was probably Tuesday morning and I was looking at my week and I had 10 different engagements that I had to somehow say something at, right? And I thought, I looked in the mirror and I thought, you know what? Courage. What is courage? You know, it's not just being a CEO at a company, turning something or bringing up profit margins. It's what everybody wakes up and does every morning when they look at what they have, look at the talents and gifts that they've been given, and say, today, what can I do with that? Today.
That's right.
Because you know what? You aren't maybe going to be able to have the opportunity to turn your company in a week. But you can wake up every day and say, this is what I've got, this is what I'm going to give to it. And that is sort of to your point about working the muscle. It's you have to do it every day. You have to stare yourself in the mirror and say, yeah, I took this job.
Right. It was not a dream.
We're here in Austin, Texas. Yes, here is everybody, and we can do this.
Yeah.
And you have to, part of my day is sort of that moment where I have to remind myself, yes, this can be done.
Yeah.
This can be done. This can be done. And I think as women, we naturally are that way in many ways. In terms of the ways that we have led in society, we wake up every day and we don't have to have that magical moment, but we get up and we do it.
Yeah.
And so to your point about moving forward, we are equipped with all of those things. And we have been juggling and fighting forward in all those ways that if we just take that and channel it towards our dreams in terms of business ventures or whatever it is, that's great. And I think also in terms of courage, we talk a lot about it in the terms of leadership, but I think there's a really important component of courage in the element of followership.
Yeah.
And we weren't all born leaders. We were all born out of the womb following something. And so I think as leaders, the most important thing we can also do is understand, how do you courageously follow? And how do you know when the right time is to lead and when the right time is to follow? And I think any executive or any person in any leadership role would tell you that sometimes you follow your team. You're not always leading your team. And so I think that becomes a very kinetic opportunity to develop that courage both as a team and individually.
Can I add one thing to
Please,
what you just said?
Please,
because
away.
Actually my producer, Lynn Graft, is here today, and I was giving a keynote earlier in the week, and I love this conversation about fear. We actually, I was doing a group call yesterday, and the whole thing was about fear, and I definitely don't think, I mean, not only do people and leaders not talk about it enough,
right.
Definitely not women,
right.
Because if you've excelled and you've climbed the ladder, we're not about to show everybody we're scared, but the reality of it is we're all showing up every day with these feelings of fear, and he sent me this quote this week, which was probably the best quote I have ever heard in my life on dealing with fear. Have any of you, do you know Gary Vaynerchuk? Like, raise your hand if you know Gary Vaynerchuk. I'm just curious. He's such a neat guy. Okay, so Google Gary Vaynerchuk. He's just this incredible entrepreneur out of the East Coast. And Gary's comment was this. So somebody asked him about, are you worried about making wrong decisions? Because that is a big source of our fear. What if we screw it up? Like, what if we go down a path and completely mess this thing up? And Gary said, I never worry about making the wrong decision because I do what I do with intention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you operate with intention, and it was this massive aha moment for me, and it just happened on, I think it was Monday that he sent it to me, this massive aha moment. It's like, wait a minute. Am I always going to get it right? No, I'm not. I've got to surround myself with really smart people who are way smarter than I am to do what they got to do to move us all forward. I am not always going to get this right. But if you move forward with that intention, your intentions are in check. You're a transparent individual. You're living a life of authenticity. You can never make the wrong decision, ever. And when you really let yourself, give yourself the gift to get that, it's one of the most powerful things I know. Again, it just this week I was like, oh my God, I never have to be afraid. Yeah. I never have to be afraid again, ever.
Absolutely.
So thanks for saying that.
Well, and I think too, you know, one of the, there's a great quote by Rollo May that says, courage is not the absence of fear. It's the ability to move ahead in spite of your fear. And I think that's a piece of it as well. It's, the, you know, doing things differently, innovating in any way makes you feel uncomfortable because it's different. You're using a different muscle for a change, right? You bring up another question. Oh, go ahead, please, Jamie.
I was just going to say, you said it earlier, but remembering that everybody has those fears, those uncertainties, those doubts. It actually, that's not a man-woman thing. It's your hand.
That's right.
Everyone has those. And it's how do you deal with those is maybe the only gender difference here.
That's right.
Right.
Well, and I think, you know, there's this idea about confidence, too, that we were talking about earlier, because one would argue, you know, just like learning a new skill, just think of any skill that you've learned. If you've taught yourself to ski or done, you know, taught yourself presentation skills, whatever, the more you build muscle memory around it, the easier it becomes. So courage is exactly the same, as is innovation. The reason why some people get, you know, feel very comfortable innovating and throwing an idea out and doing those things is because they've already started to build the strength in that muscle memory around it. How do you, I'm going to ask, okay, again, it's like you're like, everybody's prepared these answers now. I'm totally going off script. Welcome. Be courageous now. Here you go.
Yeah, here we are.
And I'm going to start over here with Jamie. You have worked for many leaders in your life. You have many leaders that report to you now, and all of us have. What are the traits, and by leaders, let me be crystal clear about this. By leaders, I mean anybody in your organization. You don't have to have a title to lead. People lead without title every single day. What do you see as the three most important behaviors or traits of courageous leaders for the future?
Yeah, see, that is off script. That's okay. I can make things up. one that when I look back and I say, where are those leaders that I can point to and say, she made a difference and he made a difference, either me personally or at the organization, one that just strings through all of that is putting themselves, we talked about the follower mode, but putting themselves in the enabling mode, and knowing that the minute you cross from being an individual contributor and you're smart and you're hardworking and you make things happen and you get this done, the minute you become a leader of a team, all of those things, they don't matter as much anymore. Yeah. And the best leaders, I have two in my mind right now, I think what they did was get out of the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They understand that the power are these talented people around them, and in some ways maybe set the stage for those people to be courageous. So, you know, helping define the sandbox, right? At USAA, we say, listen, the sandbox is big. Stay within the mission. And we actually had one that says, don't do stupid, right?
So,
set the sandbox and then just unleash and say, go.
Yeah.
Give it a try and go. And I think about those leaders that say it's okay. And I know it's a little cliche, but let you take risks and create an environment where you know. And they don't even have to say it. They don't have to say, oh, you can go make mistakes. But the way they act, the way they talk, you just know if you make a mistake, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right? You can, the world will continue and you'll be okay and they'll be okay and you'll learn from it and move on. So I don't know if I have three. I think I'm going to stick to that one, which is these great leaders who just say the power is the team. I'm overhead.
Yeah.
Create conditions for them to go do wonderful things, and they do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I also think that you did actually have three things in there. It's creating the compelling vision. It's allowing people to understand where the bumpers are, what the sandbox is. And then I think it's also, you know, we talk a lot about allowing people to fail. You don't really want to leave them hanging out to dry out there. You want them to keep testing, test and fail, test and fail, test and fail, get a little bit better each time. And then great leaders, I think also, and courageous leaders have their backs of their people and their people know it. Oh, yeah. So I think those are really kind of three things. What are your three, Ingrid?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I thought maybe you're going to switch because I was so enjoying what you said. But one thing I would build off of what you said, Jamie, is what I have really noticed about incredible leaders are people who recognize that when their team comes together to surround them, these are leaders are people who recognize this is just a stepping stone. And if I view this opportunity to collaborate in this business venture as a stepping stone for, let's say it's Cindy joining my team. Let's just pretend for a second.
Okay. Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead of thinking like Cindy's on my team, she's got to get this right. She's got to have it all figured out, you know, like, but instead think and thinking instead of thinking, you're working with me, isn't this just the most amazing thing ever? Instead, coming from a servant mentality and thinking, isn't this amazing? I've just been able to acquire this extraordinary talent who's going to gift me for a period of time. That period of time might be a year. That period of time might be 20 years. Who knows what it's going to be? But if I think about things and the leaders that I've seen that are extraordinary come at it with that mentality where they say, how can we collaborate together to bring the best part of you out of you, me to give you the best part of me? And when we've done that and we've completed that journey, then it's probably time for all of us to move on. When you think about it that way, then all of a sudden what happens is people joining teams, they absolutely bring their best selves to the table.
Yeah.
And I think that the other two things I would say, and I've said it before, I can't tell you how important coming to the table with your authentic self and high integrity really, really are. Yeah. And I will tell you, when I was an early on entrepreneur and I was told I was going to raise money, I mean, I was hustling so hard that I was saying one thing and doing another. I was trying to do anything to make my venture work. And I will tell you, it took me years and years and years and years in the investment marketplace to get over the reputation that what she says and what she does is different.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it's not worth it. It is extraordinary what happens when you show up and people know you're coming, you're a trustworthy person, you're coming as an authentic person, and you're integrous. The most amazing people will surround themselves with their resources to support you because they know even when the wheels start falling off, you're going to keep them in check on what's going on, and they're going to continue to support you as you grow.
Exactly.
So that's what I would say about just extraordinary leaders that I've had the opportunity to work with, and I certainly try to bring it into our organization as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Anything to add to that?
You know, authenticity, I think, tops my list. And I think also when you are in a situation where the truth is not easy, then you realize as an authentic leader, if that's what you choose to be, then you're not always going to be a favored leader.
That's
and
right.
So I think there also it sort of is something to be said about the leaders I've watched who have taken that with grace and who have taken it personally, but not taken it personally.
Exactly.
Right? So because it's very much directed personally when you are a leader, but when you have the ability to sort of see the forward vision of the organization or the mission or what you're working towards, you have to also understand not everyone's going to be able to see that.
Right.
And so some of the best leaders I've seen have been able to articulate that, but also in many ways piecemeal that as people can take it, work on it, grow in it, and expand it. But I think that authenticity, especially in situations when you're in a turnaround or when you're reviving a brand, it's not just important for internal, the team, but it's also important externally.
Absolutely.
It's really important to say, this wasn't working, this is why it had to change. This wasn't an easy decision, but this is why we made it. And all of those decisions really should be feeding up to that number one value proposition, right? The
that's
mission,
right.
What it is you serve, the people you serve, why you serve them. And if that's the case, then authenticity as a leader should come as it does.
Well, and that vulnerability really draws people to you as well, being able to trust what you say and do, back to your point earlier.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I do think also the people, to your point, who hire around them, I will tell you, my senior team, and some of them are sitting right here and I can see them, are people way, way brilliant than me. Decades, decades, and decades of experience. Not that they're old, but they're just really...
They're all sitting out there going, do I need a lot?
No, they're wonderful, they're vibrant, and they trust. There's this shared trust where they know they can say, Chandani, that's ridiculous, you know, calm down, or no, or, and there becomes this real ability to lead as a true kinetic team. And I would say that probably is one of the most successful tactics I've seen other leaders use, and one I will probably use my entire career.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I've got one very quick final question for you all, keeping it with the Twitter idea. So 140 characters or less, I won't count them for you. What would you tell your younger self about being courageous? Got really quiet, didn't it?
Yeah.
Anybody who wants to go.
I'll go first.
He is a banker. Don't count the characters. We won't hold you to it.
The 140 thing is so difficult for me. So, I think about when I felt the most courageous in my entire career, and I go all the way back. It was now 17, 18 years ago, and I was a young captain in the military, and I'd announced to the military that, hey, I was going to make this change. I was going to leave the military. And during that, but in the military, it's not, we'll show you the door, it's you finish out your term. So I had 6 months left. And during that 6 month period, when I wasn't worried about me, when I wasn't worried about career, or I wasn't worried about what people would say, I was such a courageous, I felt like that's the time I can look back, maybe the only time I can look back and say, gosh, I was truly courageous. So I think younger Jamie, you can't think about that stuff. Think about being authentic and doing the right thing and staying focused on North Stars. And all of the rest of that stuff doesn't matter. It's going to allow you to be the courageous leader. So
awesome.
That's easy to say and hard to do.
Yep. Awesome. Advice to younger self, 140 characters. Yeah, you're not good at the tweeting.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Well, this is going to sound like a little plug too. I wrote it down here, but it's not a plug because it's free. And thank you for asking this question. So quick background. As I said before, the number one thing that you can do to take yourself from where you are today, I don't care where it is, if you're like struggling to keep your lights on or you're a wildly successful corporate executive, the number one thing you can do to game change is find a mentor. And people have always, they always ask me, how do you find a mentor? And so at EBW 2020, this was our number one thing we went out to solve. So I'm gonna tell you it's a gift because we will hook you up with a free mentor, okay? So if you text, you have your cell phones? Okay. Text 38470. Okay. Now, and I'm going to tell you what it, okay. So 38470, just text that. Okay. We'll send you some things about finding your purpose, but then we're going to tell you where you can find your mentor, and we'll do a free mentor match. And come down and visit us, please, at EBW 2020, because we also have we were waiting for today to be with all of you. So EBW 2020, our whole goal is to provide mentorship to women free worldwide. Okay, so you can find that at EBW.
Excellent, thank you. Great. So once again, apparently nobody's tweeting up in this group, but okay, we're getting closer. Chandani?
What would I say? Okay, I would say your track record is good. Trust your gut. Go with your instinct. Hashtag go girl go, hashtag live strong.
There it is, there it is.
That was awesome.
So also, I have a little sign for you guys. If you want the Courage, Innovation, and Courageous Leadership quick guide, all you have to do is text the word courage to this phone number. So you can come up, take a picture of it, and we'll send it to you. So it gives you step-by-step instructions on how to go after your courage challenge within your organization. And I'll leave this up here for you. First of all, please give a roaring round of applause to these three amazing people.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you all for coming. Have a great rest of the day.